T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It is Bernstein and McKnight here on 670 The Score. I'm Connor. Rich Campbell of the Chicago Tribune is in for Dan. Dan's out on vacation the rest of the week, but that doesn't mean we're not talking to Cubs manager Joe Maddon, because we indeed are. Hi, Joe. Thanks for joining us, as always. Great to talk with you.
Good morning. And listen, I apologize for yesterday. I did oversleep. I'd been a little bit ill. We had a lot going on here, and I absolutely whiffed it, and I apologize.
That's no problem. Accountability's big for us. We apologize all the time when we read stuff wrong. You feeling better?
Yeah, actually, I think this is the first day in about a week. I'm starting to feel somewhat normal, and hopefully it continues.
You get the flu when you go to the warm weather. I mean, everything's warm, but I always get the back and forth thing. You know, you land in this new city. Second day I'm there, I every time get congested and all kind of whacked out.
That's it, man. It's you know, we do it all the time, but this time it just hit me a little bit differently. And you still got to go out there and you still do your thing. And it just required some sleep, and finally I got some.
Well, regardless of how you feel physically, I got to imagine that mentally you feel a heck of a lot better being able to put Chris Bryant at third base in the lineup today. He is back. And I imagine discussions with him went real well, and expectations are what they usually are with Chris, yeah?
Yeah, he just walked in, and he's smiling easily, and he's feeling better. And he had a nice little rehab assignment, hit his home run. I don't know to what level he's not feeling anything, because he's very, you know, he's somewhat tight-lipped about that. So we'll just watch it and see it all the way through. There's a lot of times, many times, guys on a major league level play through some kind of issues, and it's just part of it. You play 162, man, it's rare that you feel 100% well.
Joe, we had a chance to talk to Jed Hoyer this morning and acknowledge that it's an overuse injury, as far as you guys could tell with Chris, and mentioned that the high finish on his swing, and with all the swings he takes through BP and cage work and everything, affects that, and hinted that Chris maybe tries to address that high finish a little bit. What do you see from that part of his swing? How realistic is it to tweak something and still get the type of results that you guys want?
Well, it's not easy to do something like that midstream. That's normally an off-seasonal kind of adjustment. The high finish, the way he does finish, I've had guys in the past that have had similar kind of issues with it. But that's who he is. I know he's talked about it. He talked about it with Chile a bit. We'll see how it all plays out. My biggest concern is, or always has been, you guys heard me 1,000 times, batting practice and swings. Every player in every team swings too often. And I'd love to see that cut back. I think there is a point of diminishing returns that does set in. You talk to the old guys, like, talk to Billy Williams all the time, and others that I've been around, and their method right now of preparation is just a little bit over the top. And all guys want to do swing, swing, swing. I really believe mentally they feel as though, man, how could I hurt myself? I'm just swinging the bat. Or how could I wear myself down or become tired? That repetitive motion can be. It's just like throwing too much. So hopefully we could cut it back just a bit. And you'll be able to notice, I think, just watching if any kind of adjustment he's attempting to do takes place.
So, Joe, if he's kind of a tight-lipped dude and also a little bit of an overworker, do you feel like maybe for the rest, for like a month or however long it happens to be, maybe there's a little bit more of a dialogue between the two of you, just like a check-in kind of thing? Or does he understand that more than anybody needs to?
No, we check in all the time. I mean, I talk to him pretty much every day. But it's like, okay, if you're not feeling well, like I wasn't feeling well, or maybe your shoulder hurts, you don't want somebody asking how's your shoulder every day or how you're feeling every day. It kind of gets old. So you got to pick your spots with that. It's like anybody else on the team. So I could see sometimes I'll watch him post game or I'll watch after an at bat where I thought I noticed something different, as an example. And maybe that's when I approach him on something. Or you just keep your ears open. He may have said something to a coach or somebody else. And not only him, but everybody on the team. So you try to watch for these different signs, this nonverbal communication, because it's tough. We're with each other every day, and nobody likes to be asked constantly, how do you feel? It kind of gets in the way a bit.
Knowing Chris's personality, how forthcoming can you expect him to be about if he's feeling off or whether he needs to pull back on himself?
Well, I think after this, he will be more. So I think when you get a little bit of a setback like that, you're going to be a little bit more cautious, I would believe. So he's getting older in a sense. I mean, he's still a baby, but he's getting older, more experienced in the game. And I know he wants to play for a long time at a high level. So I think once you get like little nicks and bruises like this, you might be a little bit more open about it.
Cubs manager Joe Maddon with us here, as always, on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. I wonder, Joe, if you can describe, because we've seen results. You know, we've seen the homers, we've seen the walk-offs and the walk-offs. How would you describe the offense as you've seen it from your perch without Chris Bryant these last couple of weeks? What sticks out to you most?
The swarming component of it, the fact that we are going line to line, they are passing the baton. Everything that Chile spoke to them about, our guys about, it's a really much more interesting offense to watch. The power is still there, but the at-bats have gotten exponentially better, and they're going to continue to get better. When the guys go up there with a kind of a team plan and not just an individual plan, that's what I really love about offenses like you're seeing right now. Too many times groups will go up there more individually and don't understand the concept of not making an out as opposed to just trying to get a hit. Mm. And when you get a group up there that are trying to not make outs, that's when things can begin to swarm, and that's what I love. I use the analogy or the likeness of the 2002 Angels. That group there, man, they did not like to strike out. The ball was always in play. Great base running team, a bunch of dirt bags in the highest complimentary way. And I think we're kind of getting that method going on here. And I'd love to see that last for a period of time.
Joe, I'm glad you mentioned the base running. Addison Russell last night basically created the decisive run after his double. And just curious, what are your coaching points to guys on secondary leads, how you want them to read the baseball and how he applied those?
A good secondary means you're a good teammate. That's on the Mona Lisa, one of my paintings. I've utilized that phrase. I was a base running instructor for many years with the Angels. That was the first thing I had us do in instructional league and spring training. The first thing you did in practice was run the bases. Too many times I saw base running put at the end of practices, and guys are tired, and they always looked at it as a form of punishment. Anything you want to really emphasize, put it at the beginning of practice, not at the end. So a good secondary equals a good teammate. He who hesitates stops. These are the kind of phrases I would use with the guys back in the day and still do. You're always looking to move to your right. You're always anticipating action so that you can move to your right. You're always looking for the ball in the dirt when you're at second base. You're looking for signs and whether or not you think it's going to be a higher possibility of the ball being in the dirt. Same thing happens at first base. You could actually peek in and see things at first. So it's all about anticipation and moving to your right and about the secondary lead. Guys that get lazy, you'll see that. And when I, as a scout, I would look at the base running abilities of each guy because that told me how much you're in tune to the game. Because if you're out there and running the bases at a high level mentally, you're probably the rest of your game's going to attract that same kind of mental attitude. So I've been big, man. I could go on about base running, but Addy's really gotten a lot better at it.
Joe, I know we've talked a lot about Kyle Hendricks the last couple of weeks, and he went out there and performed the other night against San Francisco. Despite the loss, I mean, he was absolutely tremendous. I wonder, you know, we've talked about his mechanics here on the show and the way he communicates those mechanics both to you and to the media. It's just, it's very straightforward and it's very thought out. I wonder if you think that necessarily helps him in getting back to where he needs to be, or if that's just kind of a unique thing he's able to do because of, you know, his brain and his mechanics being what they are, a pretty simplified version of the delivery to begin with.
I think it's both. I mean, he needs, he likes to get it out. He likes to run ideas or thoughts off of you. And the thing about it is, though, he's very, how shall I say, he's open in the sense that when they do come back at him, if he agrees, if he disagrees, he'll tell me that also. Hmm. I'm sure I've only known him for a couple of years now, but I would imagine Dartmouth was the same way. I love his method because it's some guys, when you attempt to speak with that way, don't want to hear it because they can't process what you're saying, and they're almost, it's almost like a pushback. You're making me think too much. But with him, he knows how to compartmentalize all this stuff and utilize what works for him. And again, that's just, he's a unique individual. This guy's throwing 86 to 89 and making hitters look off balance and bad when he's right, like he did the other night. It's kind of a throwback. You saw more right-handed pitchers like that back in the day than we do today. But I think his strength is that you can't talk to him and he could process information and not push back.
Hey, Joe, what excites you and interests you about Kyle Schwarber and Javier Baez participating in the Home Run Derby?
Well, I think it makes it two things. I mean, number one, I think it does something for them, which is going to benefit us. The fact that their lot in the game is being elevated just by being asked to participate and then participating. So I've utilized the phrase, a mind once stretched has a difficult time going back to its original form. So just by being asked and then doing that, when they walk on a baseball field afterwards, there's this cachet built up that you feel a little bit better about yourself by being in that situation. And beyond that, I think the people want to see it. I think both of our guys have charisma about them that appeals to the masses and the baseball fan. And I like it. It gives me more reason. I'd rarely watch the Home Run Derby, but I will because our guys are participating. So I think there's a charismatic excitement about both of our guys. And I think there's an elevated method in regards to being asked to participate that's going to help them down the road.
Speaking of being asked, there's a question that you're going to be asked, that they're going to be asked, probably up until the Home Run Derby and afterward. Did it mess with your swing? I'm of the opinion that it doesn't mess with guys' springs. I've read and seen some of the research to it. Of course, I've never been in a Home Run Derby, much less hit a home run over a fence. But I wonder what you think, what your advice might be to those guys as they approach both the question and the event.
I won't give them advice. The big thing about this event is that I think my biggest concern is the number of swings taken and fatigue. I think by limiting, I guess they put more governors on it the last year or two, I think that's the most important thing. If you want more participants, don't make it so long. Don't require so many swings. Don't require that much effort. I don't think it's going to mess anybody's swing up. I really don't. But I do think it can fatigue a guy. And so part of this all-star break is you don't want your guys to work too hard or too often. So have fun with it. Enjoy it. But from a contesting as a contest, limit it. Limit it, make it, call it down a little bit, and you'll get more guys that want to participate.
Joe, looking ahead to this afternoon, Mike Montgomery going for you guys. What have been your main takeaways from his last three starts? What do you want to see from him this afternoon?
That's just always fastball command with Mikey. He's got a really good curveball and a really good changeup. That when he's really on, that curveball is a strike when he wants it to be. Even before that, if the fastball is going where he wants it to, those pitches become even more pertinent. So when you're watching today, if you're listening, watching, if he's throwing his fastball for a strike a high percentage of time, he'll get, and this is kind of a pitcher's ballpark out here. It plays really big. The wind's always gusting around. So if he can do that, that'll really help get him into the latter part of the game. And plus, he's a ground ball pitcher. So all this plays into his favor, but he has to throw this fastball where he wants to.
Joe, I was listening to Albert Almora here on the afternoon show the other day, and he mentioned that not being a part of the All-Star game is just kind of fuel for his fire, something that's going to keep him going in the second half. And I thought to myself, self, that's something that Joe Maddon's going to really like to hear. And I wonder if that's just more of Almora being him, or if that's, you know, something that's perked up a little bit in this particular year.
Well, I'm sure getting off to the start that he did, this is a quest for Albert. He wants to be a member of that team, and I love it. You're absolutely right. There's a strong motivation for him. He wants to be considered one of the best, and he already is. And just the way this thing is derived by the ballots being locked in even before the first pitch is thrown during the season, if you're not on that original ballot, obviously it becomes more difficult to attain the level or being in the All-Star team. So by having the year that he's having now, it should set him up in the future for getting on that ballot, which is going to increase his possibility, his chances. But he got to keep playing the way he is, and I'm certain that he will, because he is playing at a very motivated level offensively and defensively. His whole game is really taken off. You can see he's gotten so much better against right-handed pitching, and that was the rub in the past. So good for him, and I love the fact that he's that motivated.
Joe, I know the organization, I mean, many inside and from other organizations have mentioned the impact that Dr. Ken Revisa had on their lives athletically. I know you knew him well and go back a long ways with him. I wonder what was most impactful to you and to your career in working with Ken.
Well, this goes back to the mid-80s. Kenny and I have been together for a long time. It was so sudden and so devastating in a sense. Kenny and I, we would speak often, and he always prepped me for spring training. I read my ideas by Kenny all the time. Such a fabulous listener and always had good ideas and able to reduce complicated situations into this most basic method. I'm just going to miss our conversations. I hear his voice in my head constantly right now. It's just really fresh. But he's been such a good friend, and he's taught me so much. I mean, he's a big part of what Ken did for me was he made me a better teacher. You know, he listened to all my stuff, and then he gave me an idea or a method where he thought I might be able to incorporate my thoughts better with the group. He would encourage me to do certain things that maybe other people didn't see that I saw maybe at that time, and he would talk me through it. Just a really a different cat. He was the best in his field by far. Harvey Dorfman had preceded him. I thought Harvey was that, and then once Harvey passed, I thought Kenny took that mantle, and now he's passed it on to a bunch of other folks. So pioneer in his field, a truly great friend, and we're going to miss him.
Joe, you're one of many who has praised his ability to listen, and I'm curious what you have come to learn either from him or through your experience about skill as a listener.
Just to slow down, breathe, and really take it all in. I think too many times we all are guilty of wanting to respond to somebody before we've taken it all in. I try to refrain from answering somebody in a conversation until I've taken it all in. And when I don't, I get upset with myself. Kenny always took it all in, man. He never walked over your conversation ever. And when he didn't agree with you, he let you know he didn't agree with you. And those are the kind of people you want to be around you to advise you, is that group or that person that doesn't necessarily always agree with what you have to say. That is a really valuable member of your inner circle. That's it. Just don't walk on other people's conversations. Take it all in. Kenny always did, and he always had a great retort, and his advice was always spectacular.
Seems like that skill set, that listening skill set, that kind of patience and positivity, it speaks louder, at least it seems to me, speaks louder in baseball than perhaps other sports because of the everyday nature of it.
Oh, yeah. And then, you know, just what Kenny did, it was so unaccepted in a baseball locker room for so many years, and it's really reached a high level of acceptance for me probably over the last 10 years, even though it was prevalent in different areas. There was an acceptance. If that person wasn't accepted by the major league manager and what he brought to the table as being pertinent, it didn't work because players would be afraid to talk to him or be seen talking to him because it was always viewed as a sign of weakness. Excuse me. Kenny's been doing it for a while. He and I have been doing it for a while, but I promise you we had to fight through some moments in clubhouses where players who absolutely wanted to talk him, wanted to hear what he had to say, would not, only because if they had been seen talking to him, it was viewed as kind of like a scarlet letter. This guy's weak. A really, really awful method that we've finally gotten beyond. And it's just the same way in society. We talk about mental illness and the stigma that's attached to that. It's too bad because Kenny is a coach. Kenny was a coach, no different than the hitting coach, the pitching coach. He was there to help develop a skill, and the skill may have just been to breathe in a difficult moment, or might have been a routine that made you relax and see the ball better, or throw the ball to the particular area, or on defense, getting out of your circle. You walk around before the next pitch is thrown. He had all this great insight and little tricks to help make us all better at what we do.
Joe, really appreciate you talking about it. I think a lot of times from the outside, from a fan standpoint, it can be really easy to overlook that aspect of the game. And your connection with him, and condolences on his passing. It's really cool to have you talk about it. We really appreciate you opening up like that.
Well, I appreciate you asking this. And this guy is I'm looking at his picture right now. They put it on our lineup card on Tuesday. Brandon Hyde put his photograph on there. And believe me, man, he's going to be missed.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it.
All right, guys.
Thanks,
we'll
Joe.
Right.
Good luck today.
We'll check you later.
All right. Be well. Thanks.
Cubs manager Joe Maddon here on the Bernstein and McKnight show. And you can hear it, Rich. I mean, that's a dude who, in Dr. Ken Revisa, who touched a lot of people, who impacted a lot of coaches, not the least of them, Joe Maddon, the manager of the Cubs. It's cool to hear a manager, a guy in a position like that, to advocate for players. Because really, that's kind of what it sounds like Ken Revisa did, is advocate for players in their quest to get a season done. I mean, it's... Like Joe said, it's more than just the athletic part of it.
And you could just go through the stories that have been written, the comments, and as players have expressed their appreciation for what he brought to the clubhouse, it transcends baseball. It's about working through stresses of life, and Joe kind enough to share some of the value there that anybody listening can apply, right? Listen to the other person talking to you. Don't rush to talk over the guy. Take it all in, and you come up with a more thoughtful response.
I think too often everybody's guilty of that. I mean, myself included.
Sure.
Just not listening and want to make your point. And if I yell, I mean, that's how my family works. I mean, it's your turn to talk when you're loudest. So that's how it, and that often doesn't bode for great conversation.
It's a good thing you have a microphone in front of your face right now.
Yeah, a lot of mystery is that happened. 312-644-6767. Always ask you what you heard, what you liked from Joe. Obviously, the conversation, the news here is that Chris Bryant is back in the lineup, ready to roll. And there will be attention paid to Chris as the rest of the season goes. Joe's got a lot of trust in Bryant's work habits and communication effort to let people know when and where he may need a day or so, or have to rework some things. But, as we talked with Jed Hoyer this morning, it's a swing that lends itself to that kind of issue and soreness. So there's a tension that's going to have to be paid to the Cubs former NL MVP.
And you hear Joe saying that just across the board, he wants fewer swings for all these guys. And Bryant is not wired that way.
Yeah.
So that requires some managing. His pain threshold and tolerance is going to require managing. There's going to have to be dialogue. That's obviously Joe's job. He's got to decide when to pull the strings. Admitted that, look, guys don't want to be asked about this all the time. So Joe has to pick his spots. Maybe he sees something. He's going to have to be attentive. And they're going to have to trust Bryant to speak up. And that's not an easy thing to do. But as Joe said, maybe he carries the scar of having to miss some time here because he didn't speak up before. So he knows the importance of it now, and hopefully the Cubs feel like they can get past it.
He's Rich Campbell of the Chicago Tribune. I'm Connor McKnight. It's the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Dan's out until Monday, so we're hanging with Rich until then. We get back, a couple of phone calls, 312-644-6767. Some texts that came in during the Joe conversation, some answers to those. And we've also got, I thought I might save this for a little bit later, but we've got a very impactful rating system out in the NFL, one that I think merits some discussion.
Okay.
We'll get to that when we come back on 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Welcome back. It's Bernstein and McKnight here on 670 The Score, 9-1, Monday through Friday. Dan is on vacation, and it sounds as though his trip through the north woods of Minnesota and Wisconsin, or Wisconsin then Minnesota, I guess. It's probably how he's over to Eau Claire and then up on his way back to Detroit. It's going fine, apparently. Everyone's driving, everyone's safe, everyone's alive, and you can still donate to his wife's crusade through the upper Midwest alone in a car with Dan Bernstein for the better part of 3 days.
I wonder where they're stopping for food. Let's get to the real part of this.
Sounds like Dan's just, putting his head down and driving. I asked him what
one of those types?
Kids,
shut up. Nobody's going to the bathroom. We're just hitting the road.
Yep. I asked him what you snacking on, and nothing. I mean, he may pull over to like fish in some sort of abandoned lake or something like that on his way up there, and then just eat a fish out of the thing.
Okay.
Like you'd be into that. But we just got done talking with Cubs manager Joe Maddon, as we do every week here. We pushed it from yesterday to today. Joe's good to go, feeling a little bit better, was under the weather some, and really feeling a lot better. What with Chris Bryant penciled into the lineup, he's in. He is in the lineup today, hitting third and playing third base. The rest of the lineup has Ben Zobrist leading off, Jason Hayward in center in the two spot. Bryant third, like we mentioned, Anthony Rizzo, Javi Baez, Kyle Schwarber, he's in left, Addison Russell at short, Victor Caratini catches, and Mike Montgomery is set to do the pitching on the to finish up the penultimate series of the unofficial first half of the baseball season. It's 81 games, and then they play a couple more, and then they call it the half. But I thought what was interesting, as we branch, I know we've got some NFL rankings, it's very important, impactful franchise-altering ratings coming out just the other day. With Joe, too, and before we move on from it, Hendricks and Quintana pitching the way they had, did in this series. I mean, that's, you could tell, like, a sense of relief from Jed a little bit.
Yeah.
Maybe relief's the wrong word, but just like, yeah.
There it is.
Those are our guys.
Yeah.
And we've seen this and said this for a while, and I think it's really cool to hear Kyle Hendricks talk about his mechanics and how what he needs to get back to. He'd say that he's close and feel like he's getting there, and just he's such a heady dude, right? And a smart guy with a delivery that's maintainable, that's fixable. And it's not this Tyler Chatwood thing where the ball's got to be out early and then there's a leg and then there's not a leg kick and we'll put him in the stretch. And it's a steady kind of deal. It's what keeps him as viable as a major league starter as his stuff does, as his command does. It really is.
And you heard Joe there talking about how that mindset really does fit with his, right? That when you break down the details with some players, they almost get defensive. You know, you're asking me too much here, but that's the level, like you said, that Hendricks operates on. And for him to pitch the way he did, you know, with some of the outings that Jake Arrieta had when he was at his best, right, where it
right.
was just shut down.
Dominant.
You knew going
no
to,
hitter
the,
in LA,
to the
yeah.
yeah, he's going to the mound, and you know if he
it's
gets
over.
Up two runs, it would be unexpected. Not necessarily get used to that, but that is a standard, right? It's a standard for a staff that when
changes
you pay
expectations.
When you pay as much money for that entire group as the Cubs have, that you need that. You need that. And that was the type of performance that they've gotten from both their starters the last two nights.
A segment brought to you by Walgreens. Walgreens is here for all your diabetes needs. Stop by today to consult with your pharmacist and get trusted advice and tips about your diabetes medications and testing supplies. So with Rich Campbell, who covers the Bears, the Chicago Tribune, here with us the next couple of days, we're going to dive in and kind of piecemeal a little bit of Bears. Not piecemeal, but we're going to dive in and big picture a couple of Bears things. We did so today. Looking at the coaching staff, we'll probably look at the defense a little bit more specifically tomorrow.
Yeah.
Offense on Friday, because that's the fun stuff. We're going to make you wait. But the definitive rankings for an NFL season are out. Rich, the Madden rankings are out.
I'm glad they are.
Have you been playing Madden? So, when's the last time you picked up the sticks and got down?
So when I was just out of college, 2004,
okay.
I was franchise mode
oh, yeah.
all day, every day.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? But I got a job working at the Washington Post, making $70 per story. And so you're trying to make a living in Washington, D.C., one of the
that
more expensive.
That was before anybody's money in 08 went away.
Yes. So you're trying to make a living in Washington, D.C. Now, look, you know what it's like out of college. You've got six of your friends from school, and I was living in the basement.
Right.
But time is money, and franchise mode for Madden was just eating into my $70 chunks, that $70 a story empire that I was building. So I had to give it up. And in fact, it was almost like not an addiction, but it was just something that I haven't looked back on because it is so fun.
You cold turkey Madden.
I cold turkey. I mean, it was bottom line stuff, though. I mean, you're talking about need this to live.
It's a business
work.
Decision.
It was a business decision. So I got out of the game. I haven't played since the PS2.
Were you good?
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. I put a lot of thought into it. You could really learn a lot. You know, I always had this conversation with people back when I was younger and playing a lot. They need to have every NFL coach play this game to learn how to manage the clock in late game situations. It's the perfect breeding ground and proving ground for game management and clock management in terms of when you use your timeouts, when you want to spike a ball, how are you going to get the ball back with how much time?
Honest
it's
to God,
perfect.
I learned more because I didn't play high school football. I was built like I am now and thin, and it would have been dangerous, I think, for everybody.
Like a male volleyball player.
Yeah, that's
it.
Generous.
Okay.
That's pretty generous. They have, you know, thighs and
that's
hips
true.
And a whole thing. I'm really just kind of you turn sideways, you miss me. Which would have been tough tackling, I guess. But I learned more schematically from Madden than perhaps in any other place. And I remember sitting down doing a pre or a post game show I think I did both. It was Doug and OB doing the post-game show. We were out at, I think Rick might have produced the damn thing.
Real-time sports.
Yeah, and it was when that gigantic storm came
against
through
the Ravens
and delayed the game against the Ravens. I
covered
both.
That game, yeah.
Matt Bowen's out there and just like furiously diagramming plays on napkins.
He's
like,
awesome. He's so good at it.
The dude is fantastic. Yeah. Must read stuff. And he's writing stuff out on napkins. And I'm going, that's this, that, or the other thing on Madden. He goes, yeah, that game actually pretty decent for learning skill sets and schemes and stuff. So the Madden ratings are out. There are a handful, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, a handful of 99s in the game, which, of course, it's the golden rating. It's the 67011, by the way. We'll take a couple of guesses and see if you've got any 99s. I wonder. Of course, you've got Tom Brady as a 99.
Tom Brady's a 99.
Makes sense.
Todd Gurley's a 99?
Todd Gurley is not a 99 this season. No, it's one more quarterback in the upper echelon. It's Aaron Rodgers at 99. A couple of defensive players, two of them, Von Miller and Luke Kuechly at 99.
Okay. He's got to have a low injury rating.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah. Look, scrolling. They list every single one of these ratings, and I can scroll through them all. And if I did, I would be insane, so I'm not going to. Rob Gronkowski is a 99.
Okay, yeah.
Antonio Brown is a 99. And Aaron Donald is a 99. Fair?
Yeah, sure.
All right, fair.
They're the best players at their position in the league, and if that's how you're doing it, like if you're the best and you get a 99, not if you are a 100 percenter player, you can do everything. You know, Antonio Brown, you're not necessarily having him lead block on your toss left.
No, God, no.
But yeah, if you just want best at his position, 99, yeah.
So players still care about this stuff.
Some do, yes.
You don't think more, you don't think it's now, they used to really, it used to be a conversation. You know, Devin Hester would check to make sure he's a 99 speed like every single year. And he talked about
it. I get it.
And I have no problem with that.
I get it too.
But I think now it's getting to a point where, like, you know, whether it's Fortnite or stuff on Twitch or whatever it is, like, I feel like Madden has been kind of like the need for being validated on it has kind of dissipated some. What with the rest of the way players like entertain themselves on video games.
Yeah, that's probably fair. I would think that there's also a novelty for when you first enter the league, right? Like part of being a rookie in the NFL is that you are now in Madden.
Right.
Okay, so whatever your rating is to start, you're in Madden.
You're there.
But then, you know, years maybe 2 through 4 where you're young enough to still be playing the video games and you're not quite old enough to be past it, that maybe it matters to you at that point. But eventually you're like me. You've got to get rid of the game if you want to make a living doing that.
For the job, have you taken a look at these ratings in depth yet?
No.
All right, good. We're brand new here. I was worried for a second.
No.
So your highest rated Chicago Bear on the brand new edition of Madden, which may indeed just be the old version of Madden with new skins over the top of it. Guesses, thoughts, what should it be?
All right. It should be Akeem Hicks.
It is not.
And I think it might be Leonard Floyd.
It's not.
Am I on the right side of the ball?
Yes, you are on the right side of the ball.
Oh, boy.
It's safety, Adrian Amos, at 90.
All right.
Apparently the passing game doesn't matter.
No, apparently not.
So, you know, I feel bad for Adrian because Pro Football Focus did him no favors by rating him this past season as like the all-pro safety. They graded him out as the best strong safety in the NFL.
Right.
And even Adrian himself knows that that's not accurate. The Bears certainly have a more realistic view of what Adrian is. And it just shows you how misguided Pro Football Focus's ratings are. But I feel bad for Amos because he's the victim in this because it forces us to say, oh, he's not elite. When really he's not saying he is. He doesn't even invite that type of discussion about him. So I feel bad for Adrian on this. Boy, he's the highest rated Bear.
He is the highest rated. He is a 90, by the way. For sake of reference, he is a 90.
That's too bad.
How many, and this is
nice guy,
Rick, strap the headphones on here. I don't know if you've taken a look at this yet, but how many Chicago Bears are rated higher than Mitchell Trubisky, franchise quarterback?
I think I did see a headline that Trubisky was rated very low.
How many?
So I'm going to say 20. I'm going to say 20.
I'll go a dozen.
There are 29 players rated higher than Mitchell Trubisky. And really, if you look through it, like I haven't played Madden like not seriously in a couple of years, but he got the rating that every quarterback with a couple of question marks and not many years in the league gets, 74. He's good. He's not great. He's good, and you could, you know, you're going to run him through whatever skills and drills and stuff you got on the game to make him like into an 82 or something like that. In the first couple of games, he'll be fine or whatever. But 74, and you and I were talking about this during the break. There is a healthy, at least in my opinion, healthy amount of skepticism in and around a lot of Bears fans concerning this team. I think we heard some of it on the text lines. We were talking about the coaching staff at about 11 o'clock or so, and I think some of it has been meted out onto Trubisky himself.
But the skepticism is much thicker, denser outside of Chicago than here. Now, there's a natural optimism that comes with replacing the head coach. It's partly why you do it.
That head coach in particular.
No question. They're building this incubator around him. The whole offseason was get Mitch help. And the Bears have done a good job of that. And I think we've explained, you know, on this show when we can, tomorrow when we talk about the Bears and again on Friday, that justifiable reasons to believe that better days are ahead for them. But it goes back to the point that they are unproven. And so now the good thing about Madden now versus when I stopped playing it in 2004 is now it's hooked up to the internet and you get weekly updates on these ratings because guys are playing well.
It's crack. Yeah, it's so like plugging in a video game crack.
Give me Jared Goff's preseason rating last year
His
rating by
finished.
The end. That would be a good measure, right? Of, all right, Trubisky starting at 74, totally reasonable. John Fox likes to say, it's not where do you start, it's where you finish.
See, there you are. Another NFL writer comparing Mitchell Trubisky to the rest of the Rams. The Bears are the Rams over and over again.
I went out there last year to write that story in December.
Really?
Yeah, because there were parallels that people in the Bears organization were acknowledging.
That's
and
fair.
So that was a basis for that. But I also think that there's no reason to expect that type of explosion. I mean, if they win 9 games, it's a tremendous season for them.
I think it could be a tremendous season for them without a win total at 9.
I think it could be 7 and they could have a great season. You just got to see how they're playing at the end and the brand of ball. What type of ball are they playing at the end? Is it they're just the players aren't good enough, but the scheme looks right. The coaching staff looks functional.
People are freaking out on the text line 67011. How is Akeem Hicks not over 90? He's not. He's 86.
He's an underrated player.
86.
Nationally. He's an underrated player. And unfortunately, the Pro Bowl, the way that is selected, you know, it's going to go D linemen, D tackles that are positioned differently to make a bigger impact. But even his sack numbers are very, very favorable when matched up against guys who have made the Pro Bowl over him. So, listen, it's a function of them losing.
Northwestern football, the Wildcats are coming off a 10-win season. They host Michigan, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Notre Dame, and more this fall at Ryan Field. Season and single game tickets are on sale now at nusports.com. And oh, if only there were a video game for that league, but there's not. He's Rich Campbell in for Dan Bernstein. I'm Connor McKnight. It's the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Danny Parkins and Dan McNeil are coming up in just a little bit. We've got Transition in a few. Stay with us. You get 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It's Bernstein and McKnight here on 670 The Score. 670thescore.com. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. Rich Campbell is in for Dan Bernstein today and tomorrow and on Friday. So we're taking the opportunity to do as much NFL as we can heading into camp. I think this is kind of the time. I mean, All-Star break's coming around. You know, for us, for the yappers and talkers and red light pushers, this is the time to kind of take the preview kind of approach toward thing because camp takes a little while to start up and whatnot. We'll do the best shape of their live story for a little while, but we're close.
Here's what's going to be painful though between now and the end of August. We have an extra week because the Bears are playing in the Hall of Fame game, so that's why
right.
They're going back a week early. But the entire storyline here is this known quantity on defense that you can kind of put off, right? Just show up September 9th defense, and we'll see, with the exception of Roquan Smith.
Yeah, but it really offensively, feels that way, doesn't it?
But offensively, there is so much hyper-focus on their progress, but how do you measure it? You know, how do you go 7 weeks with no meaningful games, no meaningful game planning, and measure this progress. I mean, by the time we go up to Lambeau Field on September 9th, we are going to be so tired of hearing these guys talk about process and taking their word for things that Trubisky's picking up. It's going to be a long haul.
And so much of it might not matter by the time you get to Green Bay.
No doubt.
I mean, it's the stuff you plan for, right? I mean, you put out all this, you know, the playbook and the iPads and the binder and whatnot, and then you get to a game, you get smacked in the mouth, and then you react, and you have to figure out the game that you're there. I mean, it's almost like you guys are going to be wandering around like a babe in the woods come week one because all this non-competitive stuff mattered foundationally, but what you're able to execute against somebody who's trying to, you know, end you is a completely different thing.
Yeah, I mean, just thinking about these preseason games, it'll be interesting to figure out how much the Bears will run to get themselves ready for an offense they haven't run in game situations before. But really, I think we'll wake up on the morning of September 10th and go, oh, that's what these guys are. What did we do the last 7 weeks?
Segment brought to you by Jersey Mike's Subs. The sub above difference is daily. Not shredded last night or baked yesterday afternoon. Good ingredients prepped fresh every day because that's what daily means. Jersey Mike's, be a sub above. Fortunately, these stories haven't like swirled around necessarily the Bears locker room this season, but there is one swirling around the Buffalo Bills locker room at least a little bit. The story with LeSean McCoy has gotten as strange as I can imagine it getting. We saw yesterday, right? Yesterday, Rick? It's yesterday, right? Sometimes they blur together. A friend of his former girlfriend had posted on Instagram that McCoy had assaulted his girlfriend and child and dog. And now, apparently, police reports and the NFL are investigating. This is from Mike Rodak's report. They're investigating a home invasion Tuesday at a house owned by Bills running back LeSean McCoy, in which his estranged girlfriend was allegedly beaten and robbed of jewelry. There are apparently quotes in the past of McCoy demanding this jewelry back from the estranged girlfriend. I mean, this is it's not the story that anybody wants to be involved in. And to be quite honest, a police investigation has to be done here. But the wrinkles that have kind of unfolded over the last 24 hours certainly do not point in a solid direction for McCoy.
No. And the details are just going to have to emerge here. But the ball is rolling down the hill, right? I mean, it only takes that one post and you deal with those questions and the label, and we'll see if these accusations stand up based on the evidence. But you mentioned the Bears not really having this stuff. They have a good locker room. They've had that. I mean, by and large, they have not had to deal with this type of stuff.
I mean, there was a misstep as Pace came in and made a signing that should not have been made.
Yes,
and
correct.
a trust in Vic Fangio that we've mentioned before, schematically and defensively, that's probably well placed. And in that case with McCoy, it was not well placed.
Yeah, it was a desperate team trying to become functional in a new scheme. You're talking about the Ray McDonald signing there. Yeah, I mean, they had Jeremiah Ratliff come back to the team headquarters and make some threats, but the roster churn that has gone on since then, they've gotten a lot younger. They've tried to prioritize the character side, as every team says it tries to do. And we'll see how this ends up coming together for them.
Do you get the sense early on here? And granted, we haven't reported to Bourbonnais yet. We're a little ways out. But do you get the sense that NFL locker rooms this season are going to be spun up a little bit about the NFL Players Association and their statement about the anthem and reworking this?
No.
I know at the time it had been talked about quite a bit. Sam Acho has spoken quite eloquently on it. I don't get the sense, and I thought that it might, but I don't get the sense that it's necessarily going to be a tentpole of conversation for them, at least not until something bigger or larger happens.
Agreed. And the Bears, for whatever reason, they don't have players who are at the front of this movement like a team, the Eagles,
for example.
So that's sort of just the makeup of who they are. And there were disagreements in the locker room last year about whether the anthem was the proper platform to demonstrate with social injustices as the cause or the issue that they wanted to bring attention to.
Right.
But it never bubbled over. I don't know if that would be attributed to Fox's leadership or the fact that maybe no one in the locker room was passionate enough or moved enough by the cause. But you mentioned Sam Acho. I think he made a great point, is that, look, the anthem is the anthem. That's a 90-second segment of a Sunday.
Right.
But really, the heart of the matter is injustices in the community that need to be addressed with more time and effort. And if they're out in the communities doing that, then whatever you have, whatever you do with the anthem, you know, have it.
Yeah, and by and large, he's done a lot of work to that end, like actual, you know, been there with the actions and whatnot. A lot of players are. I mean, Tuesdays this league?
Yes.
And all
not
those
anymore.
Guys.
Actually, you know what?
That's right. That's right.
The Bears are changing that up this year. Mondays will be their off days, and Tuesdays they will be at work.
I'm going to have to rework my entire life.
I'm telling you, hey, listen, normally for us reporters, Tuesday was dark at Halas Hall, and now we'll be there every day of the week.
Good.
Matt Nagy on Monday. It's an extra drive. To Lake Forest.
You get to write that off on the taxes, right? It's a business expense.
Yeah,
you
mileage.
Keep yourself whole there.
Yep.
Good. It's better than $70 an article for the Washington Post, I suppose.
Ooh, it's covering a lot of swim meets on Saturday afternoons.
Everybody earns their stripes. Rich, it's been awesome sitting in on day one. Back tomorrow. McNeil and Parkins are coming up in just a couple for some transition talk here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.